The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and by no means reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, an episode about those devil-worshipping, baby-killing, world-domination-plotting Freemasons whom the Catholic Church won't even let receive communion. Just kidding. Well, except for that last part, Pope Benedict did issue an edict forbidding Freemasons communion. We learn the facts and fictions of this fraternal organization today, courtesy of Warren Packer, a Connecticut member of the craft who's attained the highest level possible in his Manchester Lodge and who, as a Catholic, feels discriminated against by the Church. Back in a moment with Warren, but first I'd like to remind you that if you are listening to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, you no doubt get how unusual this kind of program is. WESU's mission is to air music and views rarely heard anywhere else. That's got to be worth something to you, especially in this day and age of media conglomerates engulfing and devouring local outlets. Please show this big-hearted station some love by going to WESUFM.org/pledge. On top of the way cool pledge premiums the station offers, I've got some books to send you. I've tapped the authors who've appeared on the show lately to donate autographed copies of their books. The books are Gina Barreca's hilarious If You Lean In, Will Men Just Look Down Your Blouse?, Tom Krattenmaker's insightful Confessions of a Secular Jesus Follower, and Reverend Donna Scopper's Love Letter to the Pope, even though she's not Catholic, I Heart Francis. I'll send your choice to you for a donation of any, yes, any size. Thanks in advance. Back in a moment with Freemason Warren Packer.
My name is Father John Baptist Pesch from Holy Family Monastery in West Hartford. I think this is a great contribution to what the Church is supposed to be at all times, but especially in our day when we're emphasizing more and more the Church as the people of God. It's a wonderful program, and I'm glad that Maria Johnson, she took the challenge up when she recognized that there were certain voices that were not giving the proper impression of the way Catholics should respond to the realities of life in the political and social order. I'm in favor of this, even though maybe sometimes I hear things that I don't really approve of. So what? I mean, nobody has a monopoly on what the Church is. I encourage you to really to support this by your prayers. We always say that and we mean it. But I also mean this, any kind of a sacrifice you can make to give to the program is well worth it. And I really hope that if I disturbed your conscience a little bit, I hope you'll make the most of it. Thanks a lot.
Welcome, Warren Packer.
Oh, thank you very much, Maria, for having me over.
We connected because after hearing a program of mine about how gays can't get any respect from the Catholic Church, you said, yeah, how about us Freemasons? And I said, well, come on and let's talk. And here you are.
It's a very old argument. Going
that
back
the church
centuries.
Makes.
Yes, going back centuries, probably starting around 1700, but it's based on a false assumption. And it was similar to what happened to the Knights Templar. They were basically a Catholic organization that was, slandered with a big lie and was broken up in the end by the church saying that they could no longer be this organization. Their order was terminated.
Yes, and it happened multiple times from my reading that various
times,
popes
yes.
have said, that's that for you.
Yes, yeah. Papal bulls had come out from various popes saying that we were against the church, that we were trying to plot for its overthrow or its demise, that type of thing, and that's basically against what Freemasons believe, in.
Well, let's back up a bit to lay some groundwork about you as a Freemason personally. When did you join? Why did you join? Let's start there.
Okay, I started about 6 years ago, and I met some friends of mine through, believe it or not, politics, and both of them were Freemasons, and I asked to join. And that's a requisite that Freemasonry lodges do not recruit. You have to ask to be one to ask. You have to ask one.
Interesting.
And so I did ask to join. I was given a petition. I filled it out. I turned it in. And it's like any other type of club, like the Lions and what have you. They did question me about why I wanted to join and everything. But after that, it became fairly simple. I mean, I went in. There are rituals that I can't get into. There is a form of secrecy to that point, but we're not a secret society.
Yes, the way it was phrased in the book you recommended, Freemasonry for Dummies, interestingly enough, it sounds yes. like it's not as serious a book as it is, but it says it's not a secret society, but a society with secrets.
That is true. A lady or a gentleman doesn't go around blathering other people's secrets.
First of all, the ladies part doesn't really apply, right?
It does and it doesn't. There are organizations within Freemasonry, that within my group, that are does allow women, such as the Eastern Star and the White Shrine of Jerusalem. The local lodge more than likely does not have women members, but there are organizations that have co-Freemasonry, which is a man's and women in the lodge. We don't, that is not part of our direct organization, but it's part of a separate organization. There is no one voice that speaks for Freemasonry. There is no national or international control. It's not some sort of top-down type of organization.
Unlike the church, the Catholic Church.
Unlike the Catholic Church, yeah. So where you have a pope and cardinals and bishops that control the policy. There are organizations that make sure that we basically do the right thing. We have a Grand Lodge that does in Connecticut and in other states, but there is no national organization. Going way back, it was George Washington who said when he ran the Virginia Lodge and Ben Franklin ran the Pennsylvania Lodge that there should not be a national organization speaking for one, that we are too different and it would cause way too much problems, and that one side would be favored over the other.
So many questions. Oh, my gosh. But let's get back to your story. First of all, is it relevant to know what stripe of politics was in play here?
Well, it's funny you might ask that, but we have people in the lodge that are on both sides of the aisle,
okay,
as we would say. But that's a place where we can lay aside that burden.
Oh, you don't talk politics at the lodge.
Politics and religion, believe it or not, are not spoken about in the lodge. We do pray. We do say the Pledge of Allegiance. But I would say that is pretty much like any other organization, even like your volunteer fire department. If you were to go to a meeting, or especially something like maybe like a dinner where it's a little bit more formal, opening prayer, grace, benedictions are said, and they're of an ecumenical type.
Yeah.
There's nothing secret about what we do in that part of it. It is only modes of recognition. And
meaning like handshakes.
The handshakes, passwords, the mysteries of those particular elevations of degree work, which actually, believe it or not, if you do a lot of searching on the internet, you'll probably find just about everything. But you're not going to hear it from my mouth.
That's just what the author of your book that you recommended said.
Right.
You can find this stuff, but you won't find it here.
You won't find it through the person who's actually in the lodge.
What can you tell me about what the lodge is like and what you do there?
Well, like any other club, we do have regular meetings or business meetings, which are rather mundane. It wouldn't be any interest to a person who are not Mason. They'd probably fall asleep because they do have like a secretary and a treasurer, and you know, our master of the lodge is the yearly president that is changed every year. And they basically run the meeting, in which we would go through any of the things like having the treasurer's report, how much money is in the lodge that we need to pay out, bills. We do have a secretary. We get correspondence from other people, other lodges.
Is there a bar?
No, actually you're not. American Freemasonry bought into the temperance movement very big back in the day. And by the older rules, which is kind of chafing to the current group of Freemasonry, we do not have a bar, say, as like a lot of other social clubs. We'll meet in places for recreational purposes that serve alcohol, certainly. It's not where we have a moral argument against it. It is going back to an old charge that in the United States that we don't serve alcohol. This is not the truth, the same in Europe, which were started in quite often there are lodge meetings and taverns. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started in the United States. But back in the late 1800s when the temperance movement, especially after the Civil War, temperance movement seemed to take off, Freemasonry took hold of that and stopped serving alcohol in its lodges. There was no paid bar per se. We do occasionally have a dinner where wine and beer and stuff like that are served, but no, it's not that type of a social club. And I think the reason why we haven't done it is because of more practical reasons, because of insurance. If you have a liquor license, you're bound by the laws and rules of that license, and that becomes more of a headache than it's worth sometimes.
I see. So is the purpose of the Masons charity work, like the Rotary, say?
Yes. There's a lot of it. It's a huge part of it. It is a huge, huge part of it. Millions and millions of dollars are pumped in through Freemasonry into the community. In Connecticut, we have down the Masonic, here commercials for it, Masonic Care, which is a large, like a nursing home and a recovery center. It's also for aged people of both who are Freemasons and not Freemasons can go to Masonic Care. But it is a charity that's one of the primary charities here that we look after. But there are other groups within Freemasonry that have their own specific charities. There's one that I kind of like, I haven't joined it yet, but called The Grotto, which deals a lot with cerebral palsy and giving dental care to children who have a massive amount of disability. They're maybe heavily disabled in some way, and they provide dental care for them. And they also provide the training for these dentists that would allow them to do this type of dental care. And there's a lot of free of charge type of charities. One of the biggest ones, and most people don't understand, is that the Shriners are also Freemasons. It's a group of Freemasons that have their own group. And they have a network of 22 hospitals throughout the country. Their closest one is in Springfield. And they deal with crippled and burned children for the most part. And that is based on, they don't charge. If you have no ability to pay, they will not charge you. Now they've had to get into practicality. If you can afford to pay, you can pay what you can.
You know, given that and how benign the organization sounds from your description, I'm wondering, you know, what does the Catholic Church have to object to? But I guess one thing I can do to illuminate that is just read Pope Benedict's own words. He was the most recent pope to... if the word condemn isn't too strong.
I wouldn't know if it's condemned, but basically forbid is the best term. Is that I was reading his encyclical, and it said basically people who belong to a Masonic organization, and I don't know exactly what that means, but are in...
Belong to, you mean?
Belonging to a Masonic organization or order are in the state of grave sin and cannot receive communion.
That pretty much sums up what I'm looking at here. The principles of the Masonic organization are, quote, irreconcilable with the doctrine of the Church, and therefore membership in them remains forbidden. The faithful who enroll in Masonic associations are in a state of grave sin and may not receive Holy Communion. I don't know. That just seems so strong.
And I think he's buying into something that he was brought up with. Pope Benedict comes from southern Germany. And during the time prior to World War II, when he was brought up, and I think that's when he had his call to faith. People from Bavaria and Austria and looked askance at Freemasonry as something either of a Protestant and or Jewish affiliation, and not something that the Catholic Church should be involved in or people that belong to the Catholic Church. My personal belief is I have yet to see anything or been told anything or made to do anything that violates my religious code, my
And you're Catholic.
And I am Catholic. And also it doesn't violate my my beliefs to my country. I've taken oaths to my country to support and defend it when I was in the military. And, you know, you do these oaths, and that's one of the biggest gripes about this from the Catholic Church, that you take an oath that to support Freemasonry, but you take an oath if you join the volunteer fire department sometimes. you take an oath if you go to jury duty. You take an oath in a lot of places.
Interesting.
Whether you're... you want to or not. Oaths are meant to some as a form of solemn promise, and it one of the things that is part of that promise is that it's read from the master's lips. That nothing you can do here or is asked of you can violate your trust to your family, your church, your country. That is sacrosanct and for Freemasonry. And you're not I'm not required to go to meetings. If I can't make a meeting, I don't have to go to a meeting. It's not
But
required.
Are people paying attention to that as far as how you rise or don't rise through the
Yeah,
levels?
Yeah, if you want to join the ranks of the officers, you should be going as much as possible. They need people to actually be leaders, and you can't be a leader if you're not there.
Yeah.
That's goes with any organization, whether it's the Legion of Mary or our small Catholic communities that right. belong are a subsidiary to the Catholic Church in the at the parish level.
Right. Right. It's only
reasonable
to expect people to attend the meetings of the
attend the meetings of these particular groups.
Yeah. You're listening to an episode about Freemasonry with Connecticut Freemason Warren Packer disabusing us of some myths about an organization he says is anything but scary, despite how it's portrayed in movies. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from community-supported WESU 88.1 FM Middletown, a community service of Wesleyan University since 1939. Thanks for listening.
This is Mark Silk. I direct the Leonard E. Greenberg Center for the Study of Religion and Public Life at Trinity College, and delighted to be able to say a word on behalf of Reasonably Catholic, which I think is a wonderful show for progressive Catholics. I urge the support for the show, and you should go to the website at wesufm.org as early and often as you can.
Listen. Want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell? Whoa, whoa, closer.
I'm so interested in this, including the way you rise through the ranks and the names for the ranks. I'm interested especially in worshipful master. But hold that thought, hold that thought. So given that there are in popular culture, even lately, I think with the Da Vinci Code and all of that, these kinds of depictions of the Knights Templar. I know, I see you rolling your eyes. That must be a particular burr under your saddle.
Not totally, but I'll,
okay.
I'll get
but
that.
But given that, the kind of public perception of the Masons, and given that there is all manner of social organizations available to you to join, why would you choose this one? What is it about it? Is it this kind of secret stuff, or
part of it is that it is I'm very patriotic in my own right, and if you think about it, Franklin, Washington, Lafayette, von Steuben, many of our presidents.
I think going back to Mozart, didn't you mention Mozart?
Mozart is who is a Catholic, was a Catholic and a Freemason. He wrote the Magic Flute, which was actually meant to be as a ode to Masonry. His belief in that. Henry Ford, a lot of people of industry and people that stand out. John Wayne, a deathbed conversion to Catholicism, was also a Freemason. Sam Houston, the founder of Texas, first governor, first president of the Republic, was a Catholic and a Freemason.
Is this part of what drew you to it?
Yeah, I read into that these people were good people, but I think they felt that it made them better. It made them more in tune to what was going on out in the world, and it does. But there's no when you get back to like the Da Vinci Code or National Treasure or a few other movies that might be out there. I was never led down to a great dungeon with multiple locks and everything and shown a huge treasure room. That was not part of my Masonic experience. It was it's more of a philosophical and spiritual. It uses a lot of symbolism. We use the
ring,
the compass, and the square. The compass basically meant to circumscribe your desires and passions, to keep everything in bounds, and your square is how you're supposed to be dealing with people. We use these tools to basically say how we're supposed to act. It's supposed to remind you. It's not supposed to be a religion. It's for me, religion and my personal relationship with God is a picture, and Freemasonry is only the frame of that picture.
Huh.
It's not the picture itself. It was never meant to be a substitute for religion. It's supposed to be helping you hopefully expound upon that religion. And I think other people have their own frames, but Freemasonry is mine.
But not to be obnoxious, but given that there were those perceptions out there, which you pretty much had to discard as not true or real, why Freemasonry rather than some other? I know you met some friends who were Masons, and that must have been part of what drew you.
Yeah, friendship, yes, but also it's ecumenical. I sit next to people of all races and faiths.
Are there black Freemasons?
Yes, there are.
In your lodge?
In my lodge, and there are officers, too.
Wow.
There are a great many black Freemasons out there. At one time, they had their own organization, and those organizations are now affiliated. They're not the Black Freemasonry has not gone away. They call it the Prince Hall Association. And the Prince Hall Association now admits whites, especially in the military. There are traveling military lodges that belong to the Prince Hall Association. And they go with their units as they did when the British Army brought Freemasonry into the United States. Regiments would have their own lodges. And there's a story. It's more of a rumor, but I think it has something basis of truth, that there was a big battle up Stony Point, and it was more of a guerrilla raid than anything. But it was because it was done at nighttime, and most revolutionary battles were not done at night. And there was a fort that the Americans wanted to take, and it overlooked the Hudson River at Stony Point. And it was sort of like a haphazard affair put together quickly by the British. And there was only a few company of soldiers there. And in the middle of the night, the Americans attacked. And the rumor is that the guards weren't looking out over the fort like they were supposed to be doing. They were looking inwards. And because there was a open-air Masonic meeting going on in the parade ground. And, of course, if some of them had duty and were Freemasons, they'd still like to know what was going on. And they weren't paying attention because it was a boring night. They didn't think anything was going to happen. And the Americans came over and basically caught everybody napping. You know, they went in and basically captured the whole lot. And Samuel Parsons, who was one of the generals involved, was a Freemason from Connecticut, and realized that he had captured all their equipment, their regalia, their lodge papers and what have you. And he said, he asked the British officer in charge of it, I can't let you take this with you because I don't know what's in it. It could be used for weapon, what have you. So is there a general that we can return it to? So they returned it through the lines back to a British general who was also a Freemason. He said he would hold it until such time that the lodge could meet properly again. And that was what happened. There was actual correspondence between the American general and the British general, who were both Freemasons, who said, here's the equipment, and here's the lodge papers, and that's what happened.
So this is a kind of brotherly.
There has been multiple witness accounts and this happening in the Civil War. It happened at Gettysburg. And there's a big.
The point being that the brotherhood supersedes even country, in a sense.
Yeah, it does in some way. Yeah, it doesn't tell you that you have to, but if you're looking after a brother, you try to take care of him.
Is that how you refer to one another?
Yes.
Brother Masons.
Brothers. And we refer to Freemasonry as the craft.
The craft. It sounds witchy, but I read that it's more related to the guilds, you know, that craftsmen.
Oh, yes. It goes way back. It started out as stonemason guilds. And right around the Reformation, stonemasonry fell on hard times because of the directions of where Europe was going. The Protestant religions looked down on big ostentatious palaces and large cathedrals and what have you. But this is their stock in trade for stonemasons. They specifically sought out these larger building projects. And because of the wars and the breakup of the church, they started losing money. At that time, there wasn't a lot of building projects going on. It became more and more, there was less work to be done. They were reduced to doing work around the various towns on smaller houses and what have you. And as that started to happen, though, because they still met and they had their own places to meet, people somehow started entering into the lodge that weren't stonemasons. And the stonemasons allowed this because they needed to dues money. And they started out with the gentry and the local nobility. And they allowed this because, they needed the dues money, but they also started to see that it would be in their best interest to have the local leadership allow them to join, be allowed to join and start to take responsibility for the lodges.
The local leadership of the given town?
Of the towns.
Like the mayor?
Like the mayors, okay. Like the, in this case, it would be like the burges, the local lords, even the local ministries.
Mm-hmm.
And they specifically said that we're going to have to start saying ourselves to allow people of all faiths to start joining.
Interesting. Previously, it had been only.
Well, there was only the one church.
Right.
So these Freemasons, being that they worked for that church, the Catholic Church at that time, the early church, as they were, the Protestants would call it, but it's really the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
They were the ones that produced most of the big building projects.
Right, 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 of course. Yeah. So, okay, so then what?
Well, it started to change into a fraternal organization. They began to see, because this goes back into antiquity, where lodge people who were basically ignorant and could not write down what they were doing were starting to take notes and starting to take notice of what they were doing. And around the 1700s, social lodges or Freemason lodges started to form in England and Scotland and Ireland. In other places, They also started to form on the continent. And in England, a bunch of these lodges got together and said, look, let's get together and we'll form a Grand Lodge, you know, somebody to oversee what we're doing. And they did, and they had a big meeting, and they appointed a Presbyterian minister to write the rules.
Huh.
But the Presbyterian minister, knowing that it was ecumenical in nature, that there were people from the Church of England, there was other churches in the area, said, this is not going to be a religious organization to one religion. It mm-hmm. was going to be for everybody. So the only rule was is that you believe in God, and that God, that the people that we bring into the lodge are religious people. They're not atheists.
And has that precept, among all the others, pretty much remained the same since the origin of the organization?
Yes, except for maybe one lodge group that we don't talk with is the French Orient Lodge. Basically, the French Lodge, a few years ago, this happened just recently, decided that we're going to allow for people who we're not going to ask, or basically they're going to say, not allow, but we're not going to ask them about their religious, are they religious, do they believe in God anymore. And that kind of goes against what we do here.
Why is it so important, given that you're not really about religion?
I think that the people that want to have someone that's like-minded. And people being like-minded does not mean that you belong to the same religion. It means that these are your neighbors, your friends, and you want to, and that God is the center still of your world, and that it belongs in your household, it belongs in your, it belongs in the lodge. But we just don't tell you how you you pray to that God, or how that's named. We have our own name for God. It's a title. We call him the Grand Architect of the Universe. But it's like a title. I mean, if you look at the Bible, Jesus was called the Prince of Peace.
Right.
There was a big Wonder Counselor was when he, if you go to Christmas Mass, they gave him a multitude of titles. And we just give him one more. And one of them is Grand Architect of the Universe. And
it's kind of
nice.
He
said that he is a builder too, because in the book of Job, he was discussing with Job about creation of the world. And, you know, that I've set its boundaries and its foundations. And thus, God said, I am a builder too.
The way you're kind of defending it makes me think people object to this title.
They do.
Why?
They call it, one of the reasons we G-O-A-T was brought out with a goat, and then all of a sudden we're riding a goat. Which,
what's G-O-A-T? Oh, Grand Architect.
Yeah.
It's even...
Yeah, they turned it into something satanic because a goat head or anything like that was supposed to be.
Oh, my God. Where did all this Satan stuff come from?
A
Satan
guy named Leo
up.
Traxel.
All right, talk about that.
Leo is was a con man.
When?
And he wasn't. That's not even his real name. He's he had several, and one of the biggest.
When and where are we talking about?
We're probably talking around the 1800s, and
in
already
what
Freemason.
America.
What's that?
In America.
Well, he was both in the United States and in France.
Okay.
And,
I'm just trying to get the.
And then went to Italy to sell his snake oil, basically.
Okay.
And this became the final rift between Freemasonry and the Catholic Church, saying that we basically pray to a deity that was not Christian, or not a regulated type of deity that was more satanic, and that we use blood sacrifices. And
this is something Traxel said?
Yes.
What would possess him, funny word, to to go there?
Basically, like a lot of people who want to sell conspiracy theories, and they do it even to this day, is to sell. It's to make money. And they sold it, basically. He didn't sell it to the Catholic Church, but he told it to the Catholic Church, and then turned around and had it published in papers, and in that Freemasonry was not only a form of religion, and a satanic one at that, but it also has this a cabal of evil that was trying to not only take over the world and burn the churches, and some sort of greasy type of criminal-like organization that believed in the devil. And
he sounds like somebody who had been rejected from joining. You know, he had been blackballed.
I'm pretty sure that he probably would have been blackballed. A lot of the terms that we use every day, blackball, getting the third degree, a square deal, it all comes from Freemasonry.
Interesting. So is there a process where you decide who can join by a blackballing?
Well, I haven't blackballed anybody, and I don't remember anybody being blackballed. By that time, it's because we have a committee that goes that talks to the member, and the member that committee has to give a thumbs up to the rest of the lodge to say that this guy's cool, and mm-hmm. we basically, unless you have some sort of horrific knowledge, which you'd probably have to bring up in lodge.
What do you mean, horrific knowledge?
You know, saying that this guy is not what he says he is. You know, and then that's the only way then the vote is taken. But we don't even use a black ball anymore. We use a black cube, because if somebody's blind and doesn't know how to see what he's putting into the
Yeah,
thing.
Describe the process. So it's a... like billiard balls?
No, they're not. They're like marbles.
Okay.
And you just put it white for yes, black for no. And it's in the books that you can say that. But by that time, it's almost like a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to do something.
It's just a formality.
It's a formality.
Interesting.
Now.
This is a chat with a Freemason, Warren Packer, who, for the record, does not ride a goat at his lodge meetings. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from community-supported, that's community-supported, as in supported by you, WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, a community service of Wesleyan University since 1939. Thanks for listening.
Hello, this is Arthur Myers, and I'm very happy to participate in this effort to bring greater awareness of WESU to the area. During the week, if I can listen, I am especially interested in Reasonably Catholic because of its breadth of participation of various people. I was on it myself. On the weekend, I'm especially listening to some of the alternative music or music that I wouldn't ordinarily listen to, whether it's from different countries or certainly younger recording artists. Otherwise, during the week, if you're able to listen to it, you have Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, and those kinds of programs that are just plain broadening for anybody. And I urge you to both continue to listen and support WESU. Thank you.
Mum's the word when we meet. Be a Mason, don't repeat. Angel eyes, are you wise? Goodbye.
So what about the third degree? Talk about that. And that maybe will jibe with our talking about the levels.
It's the final level. There
How
are,
many levels?
Well,
33,
in,
right?
In local Freemasonry, there's only three.
Okay.
Okay. There are other organizations that have degrees. Everybody says, well, you're not the highest level of Freemasonry. There's no such thing as the highest level of Freemasonry. There's just extra levels.
Oh.
Okay, so your average on the corner lodge only has 3 degrees. It's called the Blue Lodge. That's your local, and you have to belong to them to get the other degrees.
How do you get up in the degree levels?
It's not easy, other than a lot of memory, a lot of memorization.
So knowing about the organization is a way.
Yeah, you have to know its history. You have to know, understand you're indicted first, brought in first, and given the ritual. Then you have to understand that ritual. What happened to you?
Oh,
okay,
you and understand it after you go through it.
After you go through it, and I can't go into all the knowledge of it, but
right.
Basically, it's meant to show that you are. A humble person, a humble being. You're stripped of all your titles. And that you're down to basically your relationship with God, your relationship to your fellow man.
So if you're a doctor, that doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You could be sitting next to the gardener, and I do. I've sit next to engineers,
We should say for the record that you're in information technology.
Right.
What level are you?
I'm a Master Mason.
What does that mean? What number?
Well, basically, I've gone through all the degrees that within masonry that in my local lodge.
And does that make you kind of
just a regular member, really?
Really, it doesn't confer any
degrees,
special.
It doesn't, other than I can start if they find me worthy to start going into line as an officer, which doesn't make you any higher than the Master Mason.
How many people are in your lodge?
Oh gosh, I couldn't even tell you. I would
even
say
in your little Manchester
hundreds
lodge,
hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. Actually.
Cut it out. Yeah. And they come from all zip codes, or are they really, really local?
Yeah, some of them come from a lot of places.
How many lodges are there in Connecticut?
You know what? There's a list. You can go on the website. But, I mean, there's not as many as there used to be. But one time back in the 1950s, we had about 5 million members.
In how States, many lodges?
In thousands of lodges.
In Connecticut?
No, not
in the country.
Throughout the country.
Okay.
But within Connecticut, I would say there's about maybe, if you're taking a look at town size in Middletown, they might have at least two lodges.
Really?
Yeah. Manchester.
Do they have signs on them that identify them? So it's not
I mean, and they'll even tell you right when they have their meetings. And they have websites, and they'll show pictures of what they've been doing, you know. Lots of times they're all dressed up in their tuxedos and gloves and what have you, and hats. And you can see what they're doing.
Do you wear this apron that I read about
yes,
at the meetings?
You have to wear the apron when you're in the lodge.
It's a white square of cloth.
Right.
It can be decorated, but it must be clean.
The officers are definitely decorated, yeah.
Okay. It's a symbol of purity and what else?
Purity. Well, it goes back to that. Also has a brush with the Knights Templar, and it's a symbol of innocence.
Uh-huh.
And the lamb was a lamb, you know, which is used in the church quite often. It is a helpless animal. It has to be looked after. It was looked after by shepherds. It's looked after by its mother and its father. It is an innocent being that has no way of defending itself. But it's a form of showing purity, innocence. That's part of it.
Interesting. Gosh, do you know we've been talking 40 minutes? This has gone like this.
Oh, it could go on for hours and hours. We can go on to it because we haven't even brushed the top of it. And but the good thing is it's still there and people are still joining.
Do you, when you meet someone new, do you instinctively glance to see if the guy has a Mason's ring?
No, but I'll notice if he has it on or it's on the back of the car. I do have people who have come up to me in gas stations, what lodge, and say, oh, I'm with this lodge. You know, when I was down in Georgia with my daughter, there was a Shriners lodge right next door, and I talked to a couple of people there.
Do you ever feel like you're at some risk by announcing on your car or your hand that you're a Mason? Do you feel
I don't think I'm really at risk for being violence or any special favoritism other than other brothers will know who you are.
Okay. So it's not dangerous. It's not, because it sounds like people have the wrong idea about it.
People have the wrong idea about it, but and I think it's only a small percentage that buy into conspiracy theories. I think the people that buy into conspiracy theories are very unhappy people. They're unhappy with themselves, and they're looking for somebody else to blame. And Freemasonry happens to be one of those people they blame. You say, well, I'm not a Freemason. I'll never be a Freemason. I'd be able to be up in the bank or what have you. But the fact is, the people that join Freemasonry come from all walks of life.
Where did this idea come from that you're all about kind of world dominating? I can't even say it. World domination, you know?
Well, again, that goes back to Leo and his
snake oil. Just one guy.
One guy, and well, there was other people, too, that they looked askance because they were seeing, going back to Britain, where you see a lord pulling up in his carriage to the lodge, and then you see a cobbler from still wears his work apron on, maybe going into the lodge as well, and then you might see, well, he's the physician and that's the lawyer, and I mean, there wasn't that many job titles back in those days, you know, and or social titles for that matter, and you're seeing all these people get together what the heck could they be doing? Yeah. I mean, even in the church, it was socially, at one time, it was very socially stratified. You had people that had reserved pews. I mean, and they were up front.
Yes.
The rest of the people had to sit in the back. And I mean, that certainly it doesn't happen today. Nowadays, anybody who's sitting in front is usually elderly or infirmed, or they have hearing problems or what have you. It's not by social status
right.
anymore. And they've gotten rid of that. But they used to be like that. And they figure, what the heck could all these people, they have nothing in common with each other. There's something going on here.
Yeah.
There's something going on that's probably not good. Nature abhors a vacuum, and people will come up with all sorts of ideas.
Sure.
And right to this day, I think of Alex Jones, the InfoWars podcast guy that does, I think, something on the internet. He goes on saying that we're sacrificing children, that we're making people disappear, that we are not only know what was going on in the secrets of government or the CIA or Area 51, who knows? It just comes up and up. And the bigger the lie,
yeah.
they won't buy the big ones, they'll certainly start buying the small ones. But I can tell you, especially about world domination, we have a hard enough time trying to figure out what we're going to do with the pancake breakfast. If you sat in on some of our things when we're talking about, who's going to do what shift at the pancake breakfast, trying to figure out what we're going to serve at the lodge picnic or something.
Yeah.
It's really not much different than your Lions Club, except that we have this rituals that we keep to ourselves.
And we
do shut the door, and they are guarded. We do have a tiler. We have a tiler that basically says that keep off the eavesdroppers, because what we
say
in
the lodge. So that's basically a bouncer, a guy at the door. You call him a tiler?
Yep.
All right. T-I-L-E-R?
It's spelled both ways, T-Y or T-I.
Why is he called that?
His job is to tile the lodge. That means his job is to make sure that only Masons go in there during our regular business hours. So we do have open times. Like when we install our officers, we have all our family and friends.
Including the gals.
Yes, yes. Okay. And they have a big dinner afterwards. Right. That's one of the biggest things that we have, is when we're installing a new yearly officers. And the people from the Grand Lodge come down. Everybody's dressed up. They usually have, the officers have to wear tuxedos. It's a big deal. Their friends and families are on there. And they're, the Mason is asked to get the support of their family.
Let me ask you, you're Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider yourself excommunicated, given what Pope Benedict said?
No, because if I really was at a quandary, I'd really have to sit down between picking my faith and picking the lodge. And I've never found myself in that position, because everything that I've done at the lodge is not in violation of Catholic teaching.
But the Pope says you're done. You're out.
He says that I can't get communion. Doesn't mean I can't. I don't think, especially with our new Pope, and this is where I'm hoping, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Pope Francis is a person of openness and expansion. I think he knows that the church is at a tipping point. We're running into things that people are just not happy with certain parts of church teaching.
Yeah, and they're voting with their feet.
Exactly. And the church will start to splinter if this. But I don't think that the Catholic Church has the time, the energy, the resources. And I think they've been given sold a bill of goods about this particular organization. And we're not the only organization that are getting this. The Rotarians have gotten it for some reason, though to a much, much lesser extent. But, they don't talk about the KKK or the Mafia or some of these organizations who are truly clandestine, being brought up and basically saying that you belong to this if you're a criminal. And it's not going to happen. I know that Pope Benedict is still alive. I think that even though he might be in a diminished capacity, he's not going to turn around and step on his toes by saying...
Francis won't step on Benedict's toes, you're saying?
Not on this particular subject.
Yeah. Interesting.
I think that, but I would like to see that if Catholic members are allowed to join Freemasonry openly, and that Catholic laity and Catholic clergy are allowed to join. We have in many, maybe not so much in my lodge, but in many lodges, they have people who are ministers and deacons and what have you, who take up the role of chaplain, which we have. If you look at our book, we do have a chaplain.
We have only barely a minute. Before we started rolling, you mentioned that even the Knights of Columbus took part in a kind of joint event.
Yes, I think that in the United States, they kind of turned a slight blind eye to it, because I think the American Council of Bishops, they have so much on their plate. I mean, the Catholic Church
they've got bigger fish
large,
to fry.
Yeah, we are such a small, they're not going to worry
about it. Are your numbers
growing
or diminishing?
I think they've moderated, but we've lost quite a few. We're not nearly, we've lost things to the internet, but I think the internet, we've learned to harness that, and now we're starting to see it plateau. We're starting to get younger members again.
Do you find that as a result of movies like we've mentioned, The Da Vinci Code, that some people are like, oh, I want to join?
Yeah, they want to join, but I have yet to see it actually anybody becoming disappointed, because there's no, like I said, no dark dungeon room that has all these treasures in it, that has multiple locks that have.
When you see a movie like that, are you jumping out of your skin like, oh, no, don't?
No, because I saw that before I became a Freemason, and it's kind of funny. I mean, National Treasure is probably the most amusing one, because it did show symbols that we don't use in Freemasonry that are attributed to Freemasonry, and that we're directly as descended from the Knights Templar, and though we do have a group that calls themselves the Knights Templar, we do not automatically say that we're directly descended from that Catholic organization.
That was a creepy dude in Da Vinci Code.
And yes, and that was Opus Dei, and the Freemasons really weren't part of the Da Vinci Code. Opus Dei was a prelature, and it's a very conservative prelature. Is that an organization of Catholics that take daily ritual to a new level in Catholicism?
Flagellation.
And I know that even other Catholic organizations, I know prominently the Jesuits have said to that, no. Don't do that.
Don't whip yourself.
No, because that goes against a lot of Christian teachings and Catholic teaching. It's that God will judge. Don't worry about that.
We have little time. I want to give you a chance to talk about whatever else you think we should know before I...
Well, I just think that Catholics should be able to join freely. And I haven't yet to be approached by a parish priest to say, I know you're a Freemason. I don't want you taking communion.
Okay.
I've also been told, but I also respect the fact that the Catholic Church doesn't get on with Freemasonry, and I won't wear, my Freemason ring.
To Mass.
To Mass or something. I feel kind of uncomfortable driving my car sometimes into a church parking lot with a Freemason insignia on it to pick up my child, but I do pick her up, and nobody's ever said anything to me. Nobody's called me into the office and asked me about it. And
so then what's the problem?
I don't see there's a problem. I just want to be able to get past this. The Catholic Church doesn't have to have an opinion on Freemasonry, as far as I'm concerned. But it doesn't have it doesn't have an opinion on the local dart club either.
The dart club,
or the Lions Club, or any other club that might, as long as it's not doing something that's detrimental to the Catholic Church or doing something that you know is against church teaching, why should it bother? And I have yet to see one piece of evidence, both inside and out, that this is against the Catholic Church.
Well,
and
speaking for this radio show, go in peace, my child.
I will.
Thank you, Warren Packer.
Thank you.
That was an interview about Freemasonry. You can find it archived at reasonablycatholic.com, along with a picture of Warren wearing his special Freemason ring and a picture of the badge on his car. Thanks for listening. Back in 2 weeks with a Jewish woman who cooks at a Catholic monastery. I'm Maria Johnson. Thanks for listening and for donating to our spring pledge drive by going to WESUFM.org. And don't forget to let me know which of our autographed books you'd like me to send you for a donation of any size. Thanks again.